in this song by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, he is expressing from his heart the feelings of separation he has experienced in the absence of the divine presence of those great spiritual personalities who helped inspire him in his devotional life. In fact, one who inspires us in our path back home, back to Godhead, we owe an eternal debt to that person. And a real gentleman will never forget that debt. There is a story about the great Bilva Mangala Thakur. Before he became a great saint, he was very much attached to enjoying the pleasures of one prostitute of the name Chintamani. You know the story. He was so much attached to the pleasure of the body of this prostitute that there was nothing that could keep him away from her. He would have to see her every evening. Otherwise, he could not maintain his sanity. So it is described that one evening, there was a great storm, something like what took place in Bombay a few weeks ago. It was such a storm that the rivers were overflooding, that everything was closed down. Nobody would even dare step foot out of their house. The strong winds and the deluge of rain. But he was thinking, I must see my Chintamani. I must enjoy with her tonight. So he had to travel through many, many miles of being ripped apart by the wind and soaked by the rain. He had to somehow or other cross the tremendous current of the overflooded river without a boat. And then, alas, he came to the house of Chintamani, and he stood before her, his clothes tattered and torn, his body cut with blood and bruises. And she looked at him, and she said, if you had the same determination for Krishna as you have for me, you would be a very great Paramhamsa. When she spoke those words, somehow or other, due to the incredible amount of difficulty and anxiety he was in, those words very much awakened the desire for love of God within his heart. You know, all of us, we hear the transcendental message of the goal of life again and again and again. And most of us, we very complacently and patiently hear and think, yes, yes, this is very nice. This is very enriching to my soul. But as far as actually giving us that very deep inspiration to surrender to God, that is very much lacking. Therefore, sometimes the Lord puts us in such a condition of life that our heart is a fertile field for the seed to grow very fast. And for most of us, the Lord has no other choice but to plow our fields of our heart with the plow of distress, anxiety, and horrible crisis. Huh? Did you ever see how a plow tills the field? It rips it apart. Huh? It rips the soil apart so that the soil is very soft, and then the seed is able to grow very nice. So most of us, even though we sit through Pravachan again and again and again, and even many of us chant the holy names of the Lord again and again and again, our heart remains very hard, very complacent. We still have every other priority in front of our spiritual life. Yes, I have my spiritual life, but all my other responsibilities to the society, to the nation, to my family, especially to my senses, they must come first. And I'll do the minimum just to get by and preserve my status as a Vaishnava devotee of the Lord. Huh? And if everything is right, then I'll do above my minimum. Even though I'm hearing every day, I'm reading every day, Sarva dharman parityaja mame kam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva pape bhyo mokshayi shami masucha. That you should abandon all other occupations, all of their duties, and surrender. We're hearing that every day. But still, it just, our heart is not yet tilled where that seed can really start to grow nicely. So sometimes the grace of the Lord, he plows the field of our heart, which means he rips our heart to pieces by putting us in a very, very bad crisis, stricken with anxiety. And then at that time, when we hear the message, then it makes sense. So Bilva Mangala Thakur, he was coming to the Gita classes and hearing from the sadhu so many times, but it never really, really made sense. But when this prostitute told him, if you have the same determination for me as you do for Krishna, you would be a great saint. And because he had already gone through the horrible crisis of getting there, his body and his mind were just torn to pieces. Then he realized, yes, why am I wasting my time like this? Why do I not surrender to Lord Sri Krishna and be happy, make purpose out of my life? And at that time he became a great saint. One of the greatest saints in all the history. In fact, he wrote one literature entitled Krishna Karnamrita, which the highest of all the sadhus, this literature is specially meant for them. It is said that if an ordinary man reads the Krishna Karnamrita, he will be bewildered, because it is discussing the highest loving affairs of Lord Sri Krishna with Srimati Radharani in the groves of Brajadham. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord himself, this is one of the three books that he most took pleasure in hearing. He would derive the highest ecstasy in hearing this book. So we can understand the caliber of the purification and realization that took place in the heart of Bilva Mangala Thakur. And how does he begin this book, Krishna Karnamrita? The first verse, he offers his humble obeisances and his sincere respects to the prostitute Chintamani, who helped him on his spiritual path. He accepts that his guru spoke through her to help him on his spiritual path. So you see, this is the nature of one who has his heart softened through the process of devotion. That he will never forget anything anyone has ever done to help him in his spiritual life. Many times, due to our hard-heartedness, we are very forgetful. Even if that person becomes the most abominable of all living beings. Sometimes this takes place. The power of Maya is very strong. Still, a devotee does not find fault in the degraded condition of that person's life. But rather, he sees how this person has helped me how much love and respect, how much I owe him, how much I should now try to help him. This is the natural quality of a saintly person. So here, Narottam Das Thakur is praying to those great souls who he personally knew, and those great souls who he read the literatures of, and those great souls who he just heard the examples of. He is crying in separation from them. He especially wrote this song on the disappearance day of his best friend, Srinivas Acharya. Srinivas Acharya and himself, they were both born in the province of Bengal. But by the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, they lived together at the ashram of Jiva Goswami in Sri Vrindavan Dham. And together they inspired one another to increase their service to the Vaishnavas and their love for Lord Sri Krishna. So on the disappearance day of this great soul, Narottam Das Thakur is weeping in the feeling of separation and expressing his eternal indebtedness to not only Srinivas Acharya, but all the great saints, all personalities in his life who helped him come closer to Krishna. Because we should know that that is the supreme realization of a friend. One who brings us closer to God, he is our real friend. In this world, if a person helps you in so many material affairs or takes part in your company and enjoying sense gratification, such a person becomes our dear friend. But when the sense gratification is not there, then that friend no longer has any interest in you. But we should know anyone that is bringing us closer to God, that person is our true friend. That person, we have an eternal debt to him. And even if that person falls into an abominable condition of life, we should only see what he has done for us and try to help him out of love. Then we can become a friend on behalf of God. So, yesterday we received the news that a very, very special and rare personality amongst us has left this world. His name was His Holiness Hayagriva Swami Maharaj. He has a very special and unique position in the Hare Krishna movement. And I would like to briefly summarize the reason why. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, when he was a young man, just married and just having his first child, was ordered by his spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to spread the pure teachings of Sanatana Dharma as taught by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout the world in the English language. And his whole life from that point was preparing himself for this great mission. At the age of 70 years, after he finished up all the responsibilities in this world that were required of him, with no money, no friends, he boarded the famous boat Jaladuta. This was in the year 1965. He disembarked from India, heading for the land of America. All he had, his only asset, was his faith in the order of his spiritual master and faith in the power of the holy name of God. He had nothing else. So the Jaladutta arrived at the Boston Harbor for a one-day stop, and then it proceeded on to New York City, where Srila Prabhupada entered into the all-devouring mouth of Kali Yuga in the form of the most sinful city on earth. Meanwhile, the Jaladutta was ready to return to India. At that time, there were two very searching souls who were truly looking for the path of God in life. One's name was Howard, and one's name was Keith. One was the son of a Baptist minister who was very religious throughout his life, but who was sincerely searching for deeper and higher realizations of how to surrender to God. And the other was a professor at a major university of America, who also, they were living together, had the same burning desire to know God and to love God. So the Lord in the heart directed them toward India to search out a bona fide guru. So just after Srila Prabhupada left the Jaladutta in 1965, his lotus footprints were still fresh on the deck. These two personalities boarded the Jaladutta on its return voyage to India. And they came to India and they searched. But as you all know, living here, there are many sadhus and gurus who do not really live up to the expectations. There are many who are materialistic, who are hypocrites, and who are teaching some concocted philosophy. So somehow or other, by meeting such persons, they became very disappointed. And after some months, they decided they would return on the Jaladutta back to America. At the time, they were living on the Lower East Side of New York, on Mott Street. And they were still studying Eastern religion as well as Western religion, practicing meditation. But they were very disappointed. We went all the way to India looking for guru, and we found no one who was suitable. While they were on their search for a guru in India, simultaneously, Srila Prabhupada, living in New York City, began living in the Bowery, one of the lowest ghettos in the city, because he had no money. But one young man offered him to live with him in a flat, which was very inexpensive. It was a place where practically 100% of the population were either drug addicts or alcoholics. One day, this man, he was intoxicated with the drug called LSD, and he lost all sense of sanity. And he went to the shower, and he found that he could not find his soap. So he accused Prabhupada of stealing his soap and decided to kill him. So he came at Srila Prabhupada to kill him like a madman, screaming and ranting and raving. So at that time, Srila Prabhupada, he only had one little bag. He picked up his bag and he left, understanding this place is not suitable for him. And he was in the streets. He had only one possession, complete faith in the mercy of his guru. And that faith awakened total compassion for all living beings. He had such a burning desire to help others love God that he absolutely did not consider convenience or inconvenience, life or death. His only desire, his only motive in life was to give others the ultimate happiness and pleasure of the loving devotion to God that is dormant within their heart. At the same time, all of Srila Prabhupada's friends, all of his godbrothers, and all of his well-wishers in India were demanding, come back to India. You'll die in America. It's too difficult. You'll never get these malechas and yavanas to chant the holy names of God. It's impossible. Come back. And he had a ticket to go back. Sometimes he would go to the boat and he would look on it and he would think, should I board it and go back? But then the burning compassion in his heart for these fallen, degraded souls would become so intense that with tears in his eyes, he would say, no, let me die trying to help them love God rather than go back and enjoy a sweet life in Vrindavan. So this is how Prabhupada was living while these two other souls were looking for their guru in India. After Srila Prabhupada was on the street with no place to live, a group of sympathizers who were not very interested in Krishna conscious philosophies, but who felt sorry for him, they helped him to raise a bare minimum down payment for a little broken down storefront on the Lower East Side of New York. And they said, this will be a suitable place for you to hold classes. So he began his classes, but few people were taking any interest. One day, Howard Wheeler, who later became Hayagriva Das, he was walking from his house on Mott Street down Houston Street, which is in the Lower East Side of New York. He was just fresh from his trip to India. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada, by the arrangement of the Supreme, was walking down that same street, across the street, walking the other direction. When Hayagriva saw this sadhu from India walking, he became so enlivened, he wanted to just talk to him. Mainly, he just wanted to tell him that I have been to India. So he ran across the street, almost got hit by five cars, ran up to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, are you from India? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, are you coming from India? Hayagriva said, yes. And Srila Prabhupada told him that he has a mission. He is teaching Bhagavad Gita courses every day in the evenings. He said, you are an intelligent young man, a professor. Would you like to come to where I am teaching Gita class to tell me if it is a good location? So they walked together side by side and they discussed the mission that Srila Prabhupada had been given by his Guru Maharaj. And then Srila Prabhupada, after showing him the storefront, he said, please, you come here for my classes and you bring your friends. So that night, Hayagriva, he brought Kirtanananda Swami, who was his roommate, to that storefront. And together they heard the class of Srila Prabhupada. And at first, the philosophy they did not understand so well. But Srila Prabhupada was such a loving, gentle, and genuine person that they felt sorry for him. They wanted to help him. He was alone, nobody was helping, with such a noble mission. So Hayagriva volunteered, is there any way I can serve? And Srila Prabhupada, he knew he was a very literate man. He was a professor of English language. He was a poet. He said, would you help edit my new books? So Hayagriva became the first assistant in Srila Prabhupada's great literary writings. And all of the writings that Srila Prabhupada, he would write during the day and Hayagriva would edit it at night. Or I'm sorry, Srila Prabhupada would write during the night and Hayagriva would edit it the next day. And in this way, he had, Srila Prabhupada said, if you would like to help, I have some things I would like you to edit. And then he opened up a trunk and there was about 2,000 pages of manuscript writing. And he said, can you start with this? So Hayagriva practically full time was simply helping to edit the books of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, Hayagriva and Kirtanananda, they were the first to move into the temple to dedicate their lives to assisting Srila Prabhupada in his mission. Hayagriva's service was to edit and to write articles, and Kirtanananda Swami's first service was to help Srila Prabhupada cook. Srila Prabhupada liked his cooking so much that he called him Kitchenananda, one who takes great pleasure in serving in the kitchen. And gradually, with the help of these two persons, they would go to the local parks, Tompkins Square Park, Washington Square Park. Srila Prabhupada would chant the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he would discuss the importance of chanting the holy name in this age of Kali Yuga. And through this small beginning of these three personalities, gradually more and more people took this Hare Krishna movement seriously. And soon, this little storefront on 26th Second Avenue was a thriving temple of enthusiastic devotees committing their lives in the service of God. Gradually, more and more centers began to open. Srila Prabhupada went to San Francisco to start another temple. And then he sent Kirtanananda to Montreal to start another center. Then another devotee to Santa Fe, New Mexico to start another. And then Los Angeles, and then Chicago, and then Toronto. And soon, Srila Prabhupada, by his tremendous purity and his unlimited ocean of compassion, he established over 108 temples throughout the world. Hayagriva, of course, due to his being brought up in the Western culture of American society, had many, many conditionings within his heart. And sometimes, even those who are sincere on the spiritual path, they are overwhelmed by the desires born of the previous conditioning that is still remaining within the heart. So Hayagriva, although with great love and respect for Prabhupada, he fell away from his service and began resuming many of the activities of his previous life. When this happened, it was very shocking for many persons within the Hare Krishna movement, because he was such an intimate associate of Prabhupada, and he had done so much. But Srila Prabhupada, out of love, he never gave up on this great soul. In fact, while practically everyone else was criticizing him and ridiculing him, whenever Kirtanananda Swami would come to see Prabhupada, the first question Prabhupada would always ask is, where is our Hayagriva? How is he doing? At one time, Srila Prabhupada asked Hayagriva, you come to Vrindavan, India, and you help me here. This was in the year 1972.
Sahayagriva went to Vrindavan and spent about 2 months there with Prabhupada.
And then again, due to his past conditionings, he started doing unwanted activities.
Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to him.
He said, Hayagriva, because you have helped me in this way, and because you have once chanted the holy name sincerely in Vrindavan, whatever you do in your life, I have complete confidence that in the end, Krishna will bring you back home, back to God.
Last year, Hayagriva was visiting India. And his last day in India, he was at Mahaprabhu's house in Kar, and he gave a beautiful little talk. His back was aching him very bad. But during the kirtan, he was so inspired, he began to dance very joyfully. The first time he danced in 10 years.
And then he went back to America, and immediately upon, he saw a doctor, and through the doctor, Krishna gave him his death notice, that he only had a few months to live. Now, as you all know, the death notice can come to any one of us at any time. Sometimes the death notice comes, and we only have 3 seconds to live. But some fortunate persons, they are given a little time to prepare. But the most fortunate persons, they start preparing now, because they know that at the time of birth, the notice has already been given. Is that not a fact? When you are born, your death notice is given as well. The exact time, that may be a little unclear. But we should be prepared for any time. That is a responsible human being. So he became very serious. He immediately understood that how merciful is my Guru and Krishna, that they know just what I need to make me serious. And with the help of his beloved God, Kirtananda, he came to New Vrindavan, our community in West Virginia, in the United States, to utterly dedicate his life in the divine remembrance and the loving service of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra. During this time, I had the good fortune of speaking to him on many occasions at length. The quality of his humility, the gravity of his sincerity, would melt even a heart made of stone. One day, he was crying out of love. And he said, I do not care that I have to die. I have to die anyway. I only have one regret in my life. My only regret is I could have done so much more for my Guru Maharaj, but I didn't. Indeed, he was exhibiting the true qualities of one who was like Draupadi in a helpless condition, crying out for Krishna. One day he looked at me with tears in his eyes. This was the last day before I came to India, just a month and a half ago. And he said, look at my position. He said, throughout my life I have been so proud. I'm well educated, I have big degrees, I'm a professor in college. I've always had big positions. Within the Hare Krishna movement, I was always presidents of temples. I always had distinction in my life.
I always considered that I was in control of my life. But now look at me. My body is aching in every molecule with pain. I can't even get up. I cannot even sit up. I have absolutely no control over everything. I'm totally helpless and totally hopeless. He said, in this condition, I am feeling a happiness and peace that I've never experienced in my life. Because I'm, for the first time, truly aware that I'm not in control. I am truly aware that I am helplessly in the hand of God. And I have no one to turn to and nowhere to turn to except Krishna. And I know Krishna is there. And this has given me great hope and great peace. And then he began to cry more. And he said, how, Srila Prabhupada, how patiently they waited for me. How they were always there as soon as I would turn to them to uplift me and give me the highest treasure. So it was in this spirit of total surrender, total detachment, and great love that His Holiness Hayagriva Maharaj departed from this world. I was thinking that Srila Prabhupada would always ask, where is our Hayagriva? Srila Prabhupada always wanted Hayagriva with him. So now, my friends, Srila Prabhupada knows exactly where Hayagriva is. Hayagriva is right where Prabhupada always wanted him. Wherever Srila Prabhupada is, you can know that Hayagriva is at his side, assisting him with a heart full of love and devotion. This is the perfection of life. It is said by a great philosopher that in your life, if you do not have some purpose in life that you are willing to die for at any moment, then you have nothing to live for in your life. Try to understand. If you do not have a goal and purpose you are not willing to die for in life, then you have nothing worthy of living for in life. And factually, there is only one goal worth dying for in life. And that is the supreme goal. Prema Pumartha Mahan. To serve God with love. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that is the only true goal of life that a human being is worthy of his integrity to strive for. And factually, whether you like it or not, you will die. And if you are willing to die with that goal in mind, Krishna says, Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajim namamaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te prati jani priyosi. If you are thinking of me in this way, you will attain me without fail. Antakali chamam evasmanan makva kaleva. So this brief narration, which is just one drop in the ocean of the glories of a great soul, I would like you all to meditate on some very important examples that are given herein. One is that we should evaluate within our own heart. How much dependent we are on the mercy of the Lord and the great souls. In the face of death, which could come at any moment, what really is it worthy of our time and energy to pursue and strive for? Another thing is this. that a person who is a servant of God, even if he falls into abominable activities, he is still worshipable. And this is confirmed by God himself. In the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadhurman. He says that even if my devotee falls into abominable activities, Krishna says, in my heart, he is still worshipable. He is still a saint. Of course, we cannot follow such a person. We cannot listen to the instructions of such a person. But we should honor and respect what he has done in the service of the Lord. And know that this is just some stage of purification he's going through, but in the end, Krishna will save him. Srila Prabhupada would often tell us about the devotees. He said, you do not even know who you, amongst your God brothers and God sisters, never offend them because you do not know who they are. They may be going through certain stages of purification, but who they are, what they've done, if you only knew, you would faint. This is how we should see the devotees of the Lord. Want to speak of someone who is striving and struggling, although due to his past conditioning, maybe having a difficult time. But the most important lesson to be learned through this story is the infinite power of Guru Kripa, the mercy of the spiritual master. The spiritual master will never leave the disciple. The disciple can leave the spiritual master, but the spiritual master will always be patiently waiting to take him back to Godhead as soon as that disciple gives him the chance. Therefore, the spiritual master on behalf of Krishna is our best well-wishing friend. This is the nature of the heart of a sadhu. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes, blessed is that devotee who out of loyalty and chastity to his worshipable Lord never leaves for a moment the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. And blessed is that Supreme Lord who, if his devotee does leave his service, he'll arrange it to drag that devotee back to him by his hair. This is the mercy of Krishna. This is the mercy of the great souls. And as far as I can see, in the life of Hayagriva, even his apparent fallen activities was all part of the Leela of the Lord to illustrate how the power of the spiritual master's mercy and the power of the mercy of Sri Sri Radha Krishna will never leave one who once calls out their name. We should have this faith. And armed with this faith, we should march forward on the path back home, back to Godhead, following in the footsteps of the great souls who are dedicating their lives, their body, their mind, their words to assist in this great mission of Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much.